So welcome to the Jerome Stern Distinguished Writers Series. Tonight we're going to hear from the poet Richard Lyons.
But before we get started, we have a few reminders for you. Please don't smoke in the warehouse. Please turn off all your cell phones and try not to get up during the reading. We have one reader tonight. It shouldn't be too long, so let's not create a distraction. And here to introduce our speaker is Kelly Butler. Please welcome her to the stage.
So, disclaimer, I've known who I call Dr. Lyons for 14 years, which is a long time if you're 34. Okay. On the first day of my first creative writing class, I had two epiphanies. Happens if you're undereducated. The first, my professor's t-shirt with a portrait of Frederick Douglass, who we did not read about in my Baptist high school in Mississippi. On the back was the quote, "Where justice is denied, where poverty is enforced, where ignorance prevails, and where any one class is made to feel that society is an organized conspiracy to oppress, rob, and degrade them, neither persons nor property will be safe." And I immediately realized, that's my politics, saying so out loud. The professor, Richard Lyons, introduces himself to the class and quickly draws a line down the chalkboard, dividing good writing from bad writing, and says, "For the purposes of writing poems and short stories, don't do this." And under bad writing, he makes a list that includes diary entries, pop songs, Hallmark cards. I don't remember if a discourse genre was listed under good writing, but I do remember that side of the board being but less listy, concrete language, or language rooted in the five senses. Not abstract. Then the second epiphany in his words. Great writing is not mental masturbation that your friends can sometimes read and respond with, "That's deep." I went home and rerouted my angry poem aesthetic. Gave my ex a few clothes, a hair color, and my own hair some icicles. 2 weeks later, after I turned in my first poem, Dr. Lyons calls me into his office and says, "You got a ways to go before you write a poem, but I know when someone's listening." Then he asked me if I was okay. I left his office a few hours later with goals that, whether or not were attainable, felt attainable. That's how I and many others gained a mentor in Dr. Lyons, who is reading tonight. Lyons proved to be a fantastic mentor partly because he's an equally fantastic poet, whose work can channel Emily Dickinson, Gwendolyn Brooks, James Wright, Larry Levis, and Gerald Stern all in one poem, sometimes one stanza. For example, his poem Constellation, published in Poetry. "Here tonight in Arizona, the skin doesn't chill where the night shadows lay their hands on me. Cardinals, one brownish red, one bright small wisp of sunset, flit from trunk to wavering branch. There's smudges of blood, some past revives to every last detail. The way one's features, screwed up in rage or stupidity, are still the child's face we're born with, though worn to the texture of salt, we can't shake off light salt. It's a part we throw ourselves into too completely, the face widening between us." While practicing his own preaching, Dr. Lyons never forgets to leave room for vulnerability. His poems are vulnerability. They say, "I don't want to die, but I'm willing to give myself over to the world's overwhelming beauty that I know I'm going to lose." And Dr. Lyons' pedagogy and mentorship are informed by his students' vulnerability. To this day, he continues to inspire and motivate those of us who don't quite have it all together. The result is that many of us are still writing. A former winner of the Peter I.B. Levon Younger Poets Award from the Academy of American Poets, Richard Lyons received the B.A. from the University of Massachusetts, an M.F.A. from the University of Arizona, and a Ph.D. from the University of Houston. He has published poems in numerous journals, among them The Nation, Poetry, The New Republic, The Paris Review, and The North American Review. In 1988, Deborah Diggs selected his first collection, These Modern Nights, as a Devens Award winner in the University of Missouri Press Breakthrough Series. In 2000, Richard Howard selected his second collection, Hours of the Cardinal, for the James Dickey Contemporary Poet Series at the University of South Carolina Press. His collection, Fleur, sorry, I had a bad French, Carnivore, is it Carnivore Flower, Flowers of Carnivore, okay, was selected winner of the 2005 Washington Prize. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my pleasure to introduce Richard Lyons.
I got a new cane from Bob, and I probably will need it to get back to Mississippi. Though I am preaching turmeric if you got arthritis. I never thought I would, but I do. I'm going to read from four manuscripts, two unpublished. I'm going to read one from this Fleur Carnivore that has a student of mine's painting on the cover. I guess you'll figure out my politics real fast. And if you haven't got it by the middle, there'll be an epiphany. Is it not working? Okay, thank you. There's an epigraph in this poem between two jazz musicians, Calvin Massey and Don Byas. Massey, I'm not sure what instrument he played, but Don Byas played tenor saxophone and was one of the black expatriates that went early to receive better treatment in Europe than he was receiving in America. And part of this poem has to do with having traveled to Genoa. And you have to know that Art Tatum was envied by classic musicians and jazz musicians for years. That's all you need. Black expatriate playing near the Ligurian Sea. Tatum convinces buyers there aren't any wrong notes as long as he keeps playing. Like a Manx tumbling from a window box of red flowers, the cat already somewhere else, licking a bubble of cream. You're not looking close enough to see the flowers move, a brown knuckle creasing in ivory. The red pigment, too, off somewhere. The vench is a matter of breathing, a sequence you aren't permitted to trigger. Your point of view, the alien thing, introduced to openness as the train breaks beside a platform. The moist night air, like an arpeggio rushing you along, a brutality that hasn't surrendered its beauty. Bias plays 6, 7, 8, or 9, the sax like ice, writing its invite to the vehemence of the all unacquiring, like that climbing vine that grows for years without blossoms, saved for a later, different you. Happiness having nothing to do with it, moving between shipyard and the mottled cliff, shoring up lives you can't ever story enough, the letters of your name rising on thermals. Everything breathes and transpires. That's what you work back to, a world given without givens, the act of never innocent, never guilty either. Something that changes whether you look away or join it, the gestures motioning the quality of acquiescence, the sparks a blowtorch scatters over the gray hull of a ship. We ended up in Genoa on Columbus's birthday, and we thought it was for us. This is my new baby, which is not that recent. Poco Loco is a song written by Bud Powell, the famous bebop pianist. And I was pleased I found this picture because not only is Charlie Parker advertised in 1948, but I live mostly in Memphis when I'm not teaching, and Al Green is on tap in the next building over. Um, My parents are really concerned when I don't go to Ireland when I have the chance, and I go to Italy. And I try to explain to them that they should know about Irish cooking. And I've always liked Cesar Valpovesa because he was a good old depressive dude. Although I think his views of women were kind of scary, but his letters are really useful aesthetic documents. The quote in the poem is called, "It's our lot to hug shadows." That's his line. Let's see if what else one needs to know. That's it. It's a reincarnation poem addressed to him. If you know the Ligurian coast, it's really beautiful and steep, and if you wanted to kill yourself, it'd be easy. There are parts of the Mississippi River in Memphis that look like that kind of steepness, and that's the only connection topographically. The poem's called "To Cesar Pavese from the Shores of the Mississippi." And I guess you'd need to know that he was in love with a Hollywood actress and sort of made a fool of himself a few weeks before he took his life. I think her name was Constance Dowling, I don't even know what movie she was in. Maybe she never was in one. So addressing Pavese. Whether you're watching the movie star with a Chianti bottle looped on her finger as she pays for a basket of olives, or you're eyeing the fish boats at sea, whether your notion of love forgives or condemns every last man to desire. I talk to you dead by pills or pistols, or dead like the drunks in your poems, free-falling the terraces above the sea, a rock or a root opening your brain and letting your lungs fill with salt. Maybe we share the same disease, the same twisted scarcity, the same lips. The way I see it, you took your life so mine might start, give or take a few moments, as processes like transmigration take. Given how the human spark somersaults one soul to the next, I've endured the eroding murmurs because I barely hear them. Maybe they're the narcissism I told myself I hate. I never said I was a genius. I never said I was patient. How does forgiveness work? You and I crave the light of women along hotel corridors, past the statues of soldiers, past pigeons we don't mean to kick, the birds' iridescent throats softly moaning as if lifting everything. I want to cry, my people, but they're cut in half by this river, drowning the fool who dunks his head. Close to the bluff the city's named for, the Chickasaws hauled dirt from somewhere to raise this grave mound so their dead might look down on the river and live. I carry a coin the color of coffee with a little milk, a lira coin I saved from a bootblack, wet hair slicked back, a grimace around his eyes and mouth, your spitting image. Should I apologize for what I want? Maybe death is not the other side of hunger. Without desires, aren't we dirt? This is how lights pass over barges at night. Mosquitoes rise for swooping bats. It's our lot to hug shadows. The way you wrote this, I believe these embraces, like rain, quicken the vines and dirt. In the fifth grade, I was hospitalized for a while with what is called St. Vitus dance, and the pictures of it in Europe are always sort of people who look like they're spazzing as they walk down the street, and that's probably what my hands felt like as a kid. I'm told it was a preliminary symptom of rheumatic fever, which they saved me from. Poem is in tercets and has an epigraph from Rilke. And I think the quote is really saying, be careful about making nostalgia a virtue of character for fiction writers or for poets. And if you know Rilke's essay about dolls, it kind of informs his fear of European dolls. St. Vitus Dance Teaching Hospital. It would be good to give much thought before you try to find words for something so lost. I'm going to give you a little bit of background. There was a doctor, an older doctor, that kept hearing my heart murmur, and all the other doctors couldn't hear it. So I had this feeling like, why are you messing with me? And at one point, they had me in an amphitheater, and they're using me as a visual aid, and I was like, and this nurse was very nice to me, although most of the time she would hand me apple juice in the middle of the night, so all I would see was her hand with the apple juice. So that's a little bit of narrative stuff that gets a little bit strained out in the tightness of the tercets. We should think twice before we unpeel childhood's humiliating documentary reel, its delicate cellophane sticking to the wrist. The glue on a plastic model Buick smears, a heart murmur's imperceptible hand tremor. The old doctor consistently hears my heart murmuring Gaelic tropes, intermittent drifts in the metronomic tilt. As if sharing his gift, he has to detect nothing's glitch on the disc of his stethoscope. My thin arm bent back to trigger some lever on my neck, I escape, and the moonlight slatted ward rears close at the juncture, losing my sight. At the juncture of flesh fleck and nerve sick, where fingers from the dark offer a paper cup, its timely sweet sip I can't gulp fast enough. I have a poem with the most pretentious title I could ever think of. It's called Art and Death, and there are three sections, and I'm not going to read them all. And I tried to have my black students tell me whether Ofe was as bad as Peckerwood, but since these black characters that are speaking are dead, I guess I can take the liberty of being a dead black ghost. And the term is Ofe, and I don't know the connotations of it. It feels more neutral than some of the uglier equivalents for the N-word that we have in our scary culture. In the old days, they had territory bands before radio, and the most famous one is Lester Young, and I like to tell my students that he is from Mississippi. His family had a band, and they traveled around and got famous in Kansas City, and I don't even know what vertical jazz means, but I read a lot of stuff about jazz. They claim that Lester Young was a precursor to John Coltrane, so that's good enough for me. This is in quatrains, and two poems I'm going to read you have a joke that I learned from Sue Mingus. Charles Mingus's wife wrote a book about it, and I guess the joke among musicians was sleep as fast as you can, which meant you weren't getting any sleep. And you probably know this already, but the best jazz musicians would do this sort of friendly but very serious competition of cutting another younger hotshot, which I think people took in the right spirit. I think I might have made it more virulent than it really was. So the subtitle of the Art and Death is called The New Orleans Strutters Territory Band Ghosts. Back when we'd improvise to trick Ofe's, but nowadays they love the ordinariness so much we brandish our chops and none show up to find out what laws we broke. So far we've survived, not taking root. The honeysuckle vines hook our sleeves whenever we slow down enough to sit. Do we look like we were born last night, a feral mother pinching us in her teeth? We practice going without, and damn, we're pretty good at it. We use the wind and the lack of it, croak the merits of birds, tap out a raucous dirge in the trees, sleeping as fast as we can, switching time so deftly we humiliate the local hotshots. In the car, momentum drums out miles, backaches pulse, cutting motions drone. Death is continuous, not the last erasure, blurring our names and dates like chalk. We swing tall cadet caps over the bells, so the brass will mute the joy loss takes for a ride above the empty ballroom dark. A screech on sax, the slide inching back, just so silence can't have the final word. I've had my students say how depressive, which I don't have any problem with because I am a depressive poet, but I'm always saying the apocalypse is nonsense. Until recently. We'll get to those poems later. But for years, my fellow graduate students would have their version of the apocalypse in poems, and I'm like, people are better than that. We're all right. So that was four books, but maybe the next one isn't going to get there. I could lighten this one up a little. I wrote a poem. Tried a sort of fake prompt. I was telling my students to make up their own prompts so that they really are not, you know, tied by an umbilical cord to a particular teacher. Of course, I love it when students like Kelly say wonderful things about me. I'm no fool. So I have several poems. When I write series, five of them fail and four of them maybe. So I've got a poem about a thumb, a mouth, and this is a nose poem. Gogol, Nikolai Gogol was one of Woody Allen's favorites, and if you've seen any of his early farces, there's that one with the noses running around the landscape. I should tell you that the sort of violence in the middle of the poem was from my wife taking a self-defense course. I have no idea how to hurt somebody, although maybe I do by the three couplets in the middle. The poem ends as a reverie, kind of humorously. I guess it's a poem for spring, which Memphis, we had all kinds of flowers that got killed by a week of really cold weather, but I think it's gone. Plain as the nose on your face. About one of these, Gogol had plenty to say. Plain as a blank piece of paper, plain as sand, biscuit, wafer, like a butte over arid plains. If a man has practiced in self-defense, he may drive the nose like a spike into his assailant's brain, the heel of the hand in an upward thrust. But everyone is calm tonight. Everyone is happy with the arrangements. A man blows a trumpet sputter into a checkered handkerchief. A few hairs scatter. Ah, the early lilacs. Actually, I was telling Bob and Kelly that I would be right with the Arabs as far as rapists are concerned. You can just take care of business. That's the only thing I agree with the current administration. The one and only thing. I was trying not to get myself on a watch list, but I guess I've already done that. So. My students at Rhodes College were saying, why do you want to go to Mississippi, you know, because you're so militant for black rights? And I said, well, what do you want? You want somebody who's going to stir things up. And so far, so good. This is real name dropping because I met Mary Ruffel for an afternoon through friends of mine. And we both do fake shadow boxes. And so she sent me an article because of that connection. She sent me an article about the first Iraq war, about a guy who was staying alive by eating stones. So he comes up later in the poem. And I guess I got to own up to making an allusion of Richard III. That's what education will do, make you smarty pants, or elitist is not the word. Anyway, Mary sends a clipping of a man who eats stones. Now is the winter to lift a shaky voice. Now is nothing you can keep, proceedings you recuse yourself from, a palmed ace toward the floor. Now continues to move. An Adam's apple lifting just as the player piano unrolls, begin the begin and take me out to the ball game. Will it let you get back to your riffs, a riot of disinclination inspired by inches of rain? You tote empty wire cages into a room, trying not to implode into a coward's version of what struggles in your throat. The American goldfinch, an air as airy as that, blessing or no, the tongue untwists like a wisp of steam. Do you have to be perfect? Do you have to perfect being alone? Is that God too? You want to rearrange the compendium of integral facts, but sink in a roadside ditch. Flower books agree, swamp wort thrives on neglect. If fatigue takes you, should you resist? As you leg it over the hill, the sun sets. Been compromised, collective promise, as airy as this. A truck rolls by, its back latticed with feathers. Adepts say, this is Zen wisdom. I'm sounding like Berryman putting my little explanations in there. Heft a stone for your pillow and peace fills your limbs. All you can picture is the moon over the sea, a feral scrawl. You'll have to start from scratch. You'll have to start with the airy ciphers, whatever emptiness might be depicted as. What chickens pick at, part refuge, part roughage, part rain, demolition and groundbreaking, a spade stepped into clay. To give flesh to dream, is there room for all these shames? There's the photo of an Afghani who swears he eats stones. And given the lack of evidence to the contrary, who's to say he's not the genius the world will soon have to reckon with? The twilight is a reckless taking of breath, an expressiveness the heart needs, nicking softly the notions of poise and tact, so you can keep a fitful sleep, the sound of a wave breaking, as though inside you was the patience to twist a feather duster through all the little exotic baubles, the exploding souvenirs, so as not to topple what is comfortable with simply residing. There's so much room, ghosts slip soundlessly from sleeves no one calls his. Sleep as fast as you can, a musician's joke. To lie across time, the mind shut off, not even time working. One of my colleagues called me out for not being good to my Buddhist faith, and I said, I never said I was a successful Buddhist. So mostly that kind of Zen mind, beginner's mind is a book that saved my ass, but I think jazz musicians are too screwed up to be serene, or people who like jazz. I met Bill Matthews, and one of the reasons I went to Houston was to study with him and Stanley Plumlee, and I think he got his dream and got to live in Manhattan finally, and so I got to meet him but not have him as a teacher. And I've almost got in an anthology, and I get friends to tell me it should have been in there. But I wrote this thing that didn't make this anthology. He really reminded me of Gatsby. Like, if he was talking to 20 students, you'd think he was only talking to you. And when he died, it just, that one hit me almost as hard as the death of John Lennon and Martin Luther King, which are probably the three painful political moments besides last November. Can't forget that. All of this is a lie because I didn't make these concerts. I did go to Bentivoglio, which is a jazz venue in Bologna, a good one. And there's a Christmas New Year's festival in Umbria, which I've never made, but in the poem I'm going to it. The poem is for William Matthews. It's called A Letter from the Hotel Panorama in Bologna before leaving for the Umbrian Jazz Festival in Orvieto. Wordy title. You need to know a little bit about this place. That if you've never been to Orvieto, you have a funicular train going up to a church, and there's actually, you can go in all these caves where the Etruscans fought the Romans for 2 years, and I love that. There's a restaurant where they'll ask you if you want to go into their cistern, I was like, oh, whoa, back, way back, and then you get down there, it's like you're standing in a sewer. I mean, it was clean, but it was like nothing, you couldn't hear anything. Orvieto is called a city built on tufa. I'm sure if any of you have traveled to Italy, you know that BIN is short for binario, which is train track. When you're trying to get on a train, you got to know which number. So if you've been there for 2 days, you're already going, I'm cool, BIN. I've even heard it called that in a movie. There are two towers that are leaning, not as bad as Leaning Tower of Pisa, but two towers leaning towards each other, which is supposed to be the symbol of Bologna. And Corso just means main drag, as far as I know about my Italian. It's Big Street. That's it. That's all. Shiva. So this is, I really liked Bill Matthews. I'm not saying he was my buddy, but I thought he was a great human being. And it's in quatrains. Bill, I'm here again. And of course, down the Corso, two towers tilt toward each other like old lovers. A little drunk going home. In a restaurant, I savor a little glass of grappa next to an attractive couple. A woman leans, curls a tortellini on her tongue, and hums, no, moans, a quiet song. Not exactly that, but a sound I might hope for after they climb five flights to their room and have sex, slide off laughing to the floor. No one knows who they are, if they die or do not return home. The thought I had outside the station, how I might, by some abandon, buy a jacket, call her up with a scarf to mask my lips, and then slip unnoticed down one bin or another, into another, not necessarily beautiful life. Of course, I've already slid, amateur voyeur, pitching a woman as some high-wire acrobat above the circus. What could I do with my old-fashioned hook and ladder when the whole city is on fire? I lie in bed, the decor a pale blue sky with puffs of clouds. Whenever I want, I could take the cage lift to the cafe tables on the street. But there's all day to unfurl the body from its envelope. The train to the city built on tufa doesn't leave till 5. Once there, I'll take the funicular to the Pozzo Etrusco. After dinner, the owner invites each one of their diners in turn down a circular stairwell to the base of the cistern. Space is a little tight, but there is no roar of time, no vertigo, as you stand there with yourself. Minutes later, you're back to order dessert or another drink. I recommend the Moscato. My wife and I found these places where they made their own, and it wasn't sweet, and it was orange color, and I was like, damn, this is good stuff. A couple more poems from this book. a friend of mine sent me a post that said, it's okay to be a little crazy. And I was like, I know. And I'm going to stay that way. Eric Dolphy died of complications of diabetes too, so maybe he's my hero because I made it to 66 and he died much younger, probably eating desserts in France. Dolphy played every kind of saxophone you can imagine. I learned of him through Charles Mingus' CDs, but he has a bunch on his own. The Vintage album has a, I know there's a stanza in here that's Kelly Bartlett's favorite, so I will read it in honor of Kelly. It's a profile of Eric Dolphy with a goatee, and you can see his very pronounced Adam's apple because it's sort of shot from below. And it's a good album, I recommend it. Vintage Dolphy. By the way, if you don't like experimental jazz, just play it softly and it's way better. Because sometimes it is like an ice pick in your ear and you're like, I'm not a masochist. So my secret is, like, I can listen to almost all Lee Coltrane if I turn it down. And Coltrane was, I think, a sincerely religious man. I've been told they named a church for him. I think it's San Francisco. The Church of John Coltrane, which is kind of funny. He didn't live very long either. I believe Coltrane and Miles beat their addiction to heroin. Dolphy, I think, was a, I don't know, but he seems like he was a teetotaler anyway. It's called The Blues Too Late for Dolphy, 1928 to 1964. It's in quatrains. What makes it through from the past is a lie you make true. What makes it through from what is whole and lost to you is the image of a woman's back, its curve, the horizon line, the way back. What makes it through is your horn's lisp, hissed for a demo tape. Whee, twee! Did you? Do you sound like that? Your heart retuned to the time between? Are you lost too? What makes it through from yesterday is the old melody unstrung from the vertebrae's eerie harp and played back on itself, notes bent as far as they might, most of these sharp, lavish blue and irretrievable. West Coast kid, you wet the reed with your tongue and lips, blue tweets for the finch nattering in your mother's thicket. Now shadow time filters its dust down the ridge of your nose, your face in profile as on a coin, your goatee like Ramses, jutting out, Adam's apple tunneling the earth of your throat. The stand-up is thumping at what is breakneck, a rim shot. And what's this? The keyboard rushing like a brown current, yawning grief, it's hauled too long. Half note before the beat, slide rules slip, you know you'll not recover who you are. And the future cries uncle down the sleeve with magic's hair. We story this so everything and nothing hurts. Eardrum snare, vibrating skin. Mingus walking the bass feathers the sounds while muscles kiss back reliable ache. Survival tactics in B flat. The pianist plays an atoll of notes out and back, stick at the rim. Slowly the regulars clap, chins in motion for all that, the bass extra amped, thumping fast. You push tempo against time's lapse, limit lashed, as if what hasn't happened yet were already past. Shouldn't you be giddy, old ghost? Blood at your neck like sap. Man, that's a crazy rhyme in a poem. By the way, Dolphy was criticized for sounding like birds, and when I read that, I'm like, I'm not sure that's criticism. It sounds like praise to me. But then I'm an obsessive animal lover. Last poem in this book, and I'm going to read some new ones, is in quatrains. It makes an allusion to Paul Gauguin's times in the South Seas, his what, eulogies for these beautiful non-stick-figured women from the South Pacific. I believe it's late in August, and if anyone wants to correct me, I'm fine with that. I believe there's a kid in late in August making a musical instrument with a saw, and he attaches it to a wall, and he's playing it, and he wants to go to the fair. And it's a kind of a passing scene that's not that important in when Lena is running around looking for her man in late in August. There's a reference to John Brown only from a dictionary picture, and not only does it look like a hard-to-see picture, but he looks like he's gone insane, although I still am thrilled that he tried what he tried when he did his raid. And that's all you need to know on that one. And there is a real dream in here. I hate it when my students say, I really dreamed that. And I'm like, who cares? So I broke my own rules, I guess. It's called A Human Throat. And if one of my blurbs says I'm, you know, Mr. Lamentation, and I think I'm a pretty happy poet, but so that shows how sometimes you don't know what your strengths and weaknesses are. So I'll never make Clint Eastwood, you know, rubric of a man has to know his limitations. A human throat. I'm making exultations, I'm making lamentations, I whistle dirges, uncomfortable with my own excuses. That's when the angels track me down. They dance around a dwarf apple tree, filled with beetles, already 1/10 ash and water. Woodpeckers rehearsing suicide drop from the branches, black, red, and white wrappers changing their minds at the last second and flying through honeysuckle. The angels applaud, hooting and hollering. They construct guitars with wood and wire. The doves add what they can, melancholy slipping into release, a musical form. In my dream, I'm shooting a human throat, a peculiar sort of plasma rifle. A dog with a black mouth chomps its jaws on something with a tail, maybe a squirrel. The angels play acoustic whistle and simple drum, centuries passing between the first note and the second. A little leery, I wrestle with the angels. They can't tell the male from the female body. It is the touching that thrills them. Hands flexing muscles, the hesitation of ligaments when the mind sends mixed signals. I love the way my skin tingles. I love the smell of my sandals burning. I look like John Brown, aphasia grin, beard bristling. I'm ready to pay every last dollar and drop of blood. I am blowing harmonica past pride and desire. It is too late to start over. I look like the French painter, far from home, watching his brown-skinned love lift a clay pot over the blue fields of water. Inside it is the water of satisfaction. Inside it is all the time in the world. So that's in Poco Loco. Get rid of these. So I'm going to read you five shorter poems. All shorter poems. Probably should call the last three books Wrestling the Angel. I'm sort of obsessed with Gauguin's picture of the angel and Jacob in the background and the ladies from the village watching it. I'm just waiting for some press to say, that's too expensive, we can't use that. So I'm ready to be denied. Wrestling the Angel is a book of psalms, really based on Odysseus Elitus's psalms, and maybe I'm mixing up some of his forms. I believe he won the Nobel Prize in 79. But in my poems, the body equals the soul, so me and Whitman and Stevens and I think almost every poet believes that, as every good acupuncturist believes the body is equal to the soul, which makes you a radical in this country, but that's okay. These poems are all in one stanza. I make an allusion to George Andrade. I like him. I know there's another Andrade that's more popular, that Elizabeth Bishop translated, but I like George Andrade. He was a diplomat and a poet, and He's from Ecuador. And this, I had the fiction experience in this poem where it took off and did something better than I could do. And I hear that from fiction writers all the time, but poems end so fast that they, or relatively fast compared to fiction writers, that was a pleasure I'd never had before. This poem's called Psalm with the Doors and Windows Open. And I suppose it's a kind of, both of these next two poems are showing my affection for Frank O'Hara. The trees distract my attention and remember me as a passing, as do the open windows and doors and a flashing bicyclist and a line of school kids on a rope between their tenders. I move uneasily across a bridge, my hair gusting. I've forgotten my little hat with the brim, so I fret a little. I'm walking down the street, touching the bark of young trees. A man is leaving a tip on a patio table. A woman is touching her lip. Here is a minute between my fingers. Here is my biography of bird nests, one with sticks, grass, and a strip from a secret document, one unstitching itself, one with mud-flecked small blue eggs. Here is shock. It's unrecognizable when I wear the mask of composure. Here is the feeling that time is running out. It's Jay Andrade's rooster with a head wound. Here is my insect nerve. Should I take my bearings? Here's my fear of loneliness. It's really small, a fleck of lapis. I wear the mask with raised eyebrows, the mask with flashing teeth. I'm afraid of ocean vistas. I'm the shout in a darkened mall. Here is the rat, the pride inside my desires. It's got a lot of mileage. Here's my false confessions in triplicate. I know everyone has questions. Here is my silence on compact disc. Nightly, no one is really listening. I am shuttling my body and wondering why I can't remember the mobile spinning above my unfocused infant eyes. At this very instant, a child is conceived on the dark side of the globe from where I'm standing. The new mother and father are ravenous lovers, climbing each other like trees, double or nothing, good for them, exact and tender. I want to feel all of our hearts beating, lungs wheezing, mouths drooling. I want to sleep for 20 or 30 minutes. I want to snuggle and kick. I want to know where I stand in relation to the stars and the highways. I want to touch what is forbidden every mortal. I want to sit for a minute, it doesn't matter where. With the side of my hand, I wipe the spittle from my lip. I got a fan letter for that poem from Hawaii. For a long time, my book manuscript was called Living Time. I still like it, but nobody else did. And maybe not obviously, I wanted to ring that I'm making fun of killing time. There's no stanza breaks. If you've been to Memphis, you know Beale Street, Lorraine Motel is where Martin Luther King was assassinated. It's now the Civil Rights Museum. The thing that got this poem going is on the next, they've extended the stairs up to Main Street. And over here is what used to be called Cafe Onks, owned by a sophisticated black woman who was trying to get a jazz thing going. And so I used to go there. I think it has a new name now. And a little bit down the street is the arcade where they've made at least two of John Grisham's movies, scenes from The Client especially. I remember the bad guy with the dimple is sitting in the last booth where my wife and I went when we got married. We went to that booth and had breakfast. As, of course, we were being ironic. We look around like, how come nobody gets it? Anyway, you'll see an animal lover poem in this. The Metal Museum, if you haven't been to Memphis, is right on the river. You get this great view, and there's a huge Choctaw burial mound there. It's kind of hard to miss, even bigger than Mound City in Alabama. You can go, that's got to be some ancient graveyard thing. It's, I don't know. It seems to me the hill's about 40 feet high. So this is a sort of a Harrow poem, which he calls, you know my poem's about walking around doing this and doing that? That's this poem. Living Time. From the Metal Museum, I can see a burial mound, or I can watch the river bend and pick up power. I think I'll sit on the bench perched on the cliff and read about the steamboats and the barges till they appear on the ripples beyond the pages. I think I'll dance like Groucho Marx, pursed lips, and pretend a debutante is pressing her cheek to mine. It will only take a few minutes. There will be time to watch the welder's sparks kiss his visor, time to dip the copper cup in the well water, spilling some on my greedy chin and shirt with the lasso collar. There will be time to distinguish the metallic birds from the feathered ones, pairs of cardinals, blue jays that survived the West Nile virus, several swallows gathering on the branches ready to start their migration. If I want, I can walk as far as the train station, drink coffee across the street at the arcade, check out what new austere cut of hair crowns the little waitress with the indigo eyes. Maybe I'll knock at one of the new galleries, check out the canvases, still redolent with gigantic abstract swirls, if I can stand close enough, if I can mix patience and energy without becoming a zombie. There will be time to visit the black-owned club, pick at a cucumber salad, and listen to a little trumpet and drum, unless the musicians are still in bed, having played an extra set last night and gorged themselves on air. I know the Lorraine Motel runs one block east of where I sit. I know the bullet that began my adult life flew from a window just a few feet above where I'm sitting on this distressed chair. Maybe I can make it through one day without anguish talking. Outside near the bus stop, I scratch an old shepherd and beagle around the ears the way I do the first three fingernails real fast. There is a terrier with swollen teats and another dog that looks like a hairy poodle beside a part-time pit bull, part pit bull, part-time. Jeez, that's too surreal. And now this is probably the statement of my aesthetic. I love the mongrels. We circle around each other, sniffing every mouth and hair. I become a member of the pack by cheating, a stick of jerky. We trot off in the direction of Beale Street, dipping in every alley and hole, smelling all the edges, wagging tails, yapping, then dash off after pigeons to see them fly. Living time, living time. After a while, we climb up the hill into the shade of some trees, lie down against each other's bodies, hip to rib cage, looking up through the young mimosa leaves, not in a hurry to do anything, not saying a word to each other, letting our tongues lull, panting. I'm really a cat person, but I'm cool with dogs, especially if they don't bark. Now, this is darker stuff. Three little poems, all in tercets. I think the last manuscript is what I called SARMS, soul equals the body, going all the way back to John Donne, of course, who's a great contemporary poet, by the way, if you haven't checked out him. This poem is after Pablo Neruda, and you'll get the point real fast. I think I need some water. All you need to know. And for the time being, it's got a title that leads into the poem, so I'll just start with line one. Chaos drinks wormy jugs of tequila. Tall men wear black gloves, so violence and plunder leave no fingerprint smudges. Everything is a tad distorted. The adjust button on the TV refuses. Egotistical whim runs rampant. This is the age of the thatched hairpiece. Just shut up and enjoy it. Blasphemy becomes him. His bill of health is a forgery, as is his birth certificate. It claims he was born in this world. His eyes are pustules. His open mouth a bellows, a coal chute, a host of blowflies. The feel of uncooked chicken skin, and you're infected, my brother. Quarantine and escape are forbidden. No island getaways, no goblets with paper umbrellas, no final toast. Our vertebrae are twisted to kiss our own gray anal starfish. Little Chaucer in there. I'm already on the hit list, so I'll say no more about that one. This is a better, a more ambitious poem, let's put it that way, where I played with, I didn't play with words inside of words for a long time, but I tried doing that in this manuscript, at least for part of it. What do I have to tell you? I guess I don't have to tell you anything. No, except that it's probably stupidly self-conscious about the language, not about the persona. Take an eraser to an error. Take a nail gun or hammer. Nails are as messy as snails, metallic sheen on steps. How many dwarfs can a man carry to the edge of the wharfs till a dog barks as if to say, toss them, why don't you? Will a poor start a riot, driving dogs and chariots over Bermuda blue lawns? Will their hands comb the smoke? Snobs will hide behind doorknobs and know how to spell their names, imagining thieves like tinsel growing on deciduous trees. They whisper the word level is spelled the same either way. I wonder if this is a phrase handed back through time to arrive at the end of a line of mad kings. Surely I am a cobweb cowboy compared to these, my Stetson moist dust. I mimic the vibrato of a trumpet scratching graffiti on eaves. Take a fly swatter. Take a whisk. Time will always be vicious. When it zooms inside the brain like a drone bee doing his job for the queen, seize the biscuits. Or a dime so slick no one can pick up this tip some nice old lady's left behind on the Formica counter. Click the return chute of the payphone in the corner of the diner the way you used to dash a finger in holy water. As if it would burn like acid and anoint whatever chances you had on the street, being a boy, and then a man with terribly limited swagger. An animal knows how to disappear, cunning like a ratchet turning the gut. And that one follows Donald appropriately. I started this by pretending I was going to talk about Eric Clapton and Nirvana's Unplugged albums, but it hasn't had much to do with that. This is the last poem. You have to know that Stevens has a book called The Necessary Angel of Earth. You don't really have to know about Artaud, but I would advertise for you to reread Theater and Its Double, because he has this great explanation of how the most important part of us is our bodies, especially in theater. He has three phrases I'll read you. Revelatory aspect of matter, and he doesn't mean what's the matter, he means this matter, mud and flesh. And gestures meant to last. So of course, for me, Artaud, Stevens, Whitman all come together for that reason. And And I wanted you to know about the theater and its double, because I make, I change it and use the theater of something in the last line. So this is Terceth's last poem. I want a book called The Angel Unplugged, ripening figs on the kitchen counter, blossoms a piled on the table, can't wait but wilt. Any insect castaways I try to shuffle inside a paper bag and deposit outside in the heat. The soul is the body, isn't it? Someone taught me this before acupuncture did. Modernist or not, I'm allergic to cut grass and cat saliva. So some parts of our lives are torturous. Like Samson and Delilah, two Russian blue and tortoise shell, so tubular, spread on either windowsill. Those are my cats. When I tell my students, I'm always trying to get my cats in a poem. Everything I love makes the tree of knowledge lean like a person with spine troubles. We're not immortal, a notion the body knows but doesn't adulate. Moon bangs down the stairs in its boots as if it's made of tin. Someone is playing a trumpet with a mute, but the wind swallows a third of the melody. Beauty is often crimped. I have lived in three different warm climates. I guess cicadas pitch their wail by how much water falls from the sky. Each baseball pitcher has his private windup, fastballers, knuckleballers, and everything in between. So far, I've lost four friends to cancer. I won't concentrate on the deluge. For the most part, I fight any masochistic or sadistic traits, but I'm not perfect. I'm pretty impractical. Someone has to hold up the other end of the universe. Don't we have chaos in and outside our brains? I exhaust myself sitting by a lake. Two hawks come up empty. Bluebirds make it back to houses with tiny mouths, crosshatched with shadows, playing their parts in the theater of nonchalance. I unplug my angel at the coccyx. Thank you very much.